Welcome, everyone. Thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, changing the way we experience life and spirituality. Today is October 2nd, 2015. Today on A Course in Miracles, I'm excited because Susan Dugan is back with me. Now, last week, Susan joined me, and we started discussing ACIM Workbook Lesson 131, No One Can Fail Who Seeks to Reach the Truth. And I loved that conversation, but we were nowhere near really just talking about everything that there is in this lesson. And the truth is, we could probably talk for a dozen shows and still not get all of it. But we would like to come back today and just talk about more about what this lesson means to us and some of the things that we are applying to our lives as a result of studying this lesson. So I'm glad that you're here today, and I thank you so much for joining us. And by the way, if you missed last week's show, you can hear it and even download an MP3 recording by going to the archives on the 12radio.com website. Now, I know you're familiar with Susan. Many of you have heard her at least once a month on my show. She's the author of 3 books on forgiveness. She's also a co-founder of the School for A Course in Miracles, and she facilitates ACIM study groups in Denver, Colorado. So I know that you know her, and she's going to come on with me in just a minute. But one thing we would both invite you to do is join us in the 12 Radio chat room on Facebook. And if you're new, this is the way you get there. You go to the 12radio.com website, and you click on the chat button, and that will automatically redirect you to our private group on Facebook, and you can just ask to join and then be right there. And thank you so much for the people who are already there. I love your comments, and in many ways, I really feel your presence. So thank you for being there. So let's just get started, and let's continue our discussion of Lesson 131. Good morning, Susan. Thank you for being here today.
Hi, C.A. You're welcome.
And I'm excited to get right back into Lesson 131, which is what we were talking about last week. But, you know, before we do, I wanted to mention, you know, listening to the show and what we did last week, you had kind of ended, you had been talking about a dream that you had had where Jesus just seemed to be everywhere, you know, and it's sort of like you just couldn't escape that. And listening to it, it reminded me of a dream that I had years ago. And even though I believe that dream really had to do with something going on in my life that had, in a sense, nothing to do with the Course in Miracles. I didn't even know about I knew about the Course in Miracles, but I was not a student. But all of a sudden, it's very informative in terms of how I really felt at that time. And what was happening for me is I was having these repetitive dreams about a mountain lion. And the mountain lion was always inside my house, or it was inside my office at my job. And I would go screaming through the halls or, you know, whatever, going, there's a mountain lion, there's a mountain lion. And my coworkers would just kind of look like, what is she talking about? And the dreams got progressively scarier and scarier because at each moment, every time the mountain lion would just like literally reach out one of those huge paws and, you know, grab me. And that's always, I would literally wake up screaming. And just kind of shaking in my bed, going, oh, my God, you know, and realize, okay, there's no mountain lion. But many times the dreams, actually the mountain lion was in my house. And that was scary too. But what was interesting in the way of maybe lucid dreaming, and I'm probably not using that term quite correctly, but what I remember is every dream that I had, I could remember the other dreams. And so each time I progressively was trying to figure out how to keep this mountain lion from grabbing me. And so I started doing different things in the dream to get away from the mountain lion. And I would remember each time what I had done before that hadn't worked. But the last dream that I had, interestingly enough, was I opened a bathroom door, or no, that wasn't the last. The second to the last was the mountain lion was chasing me, and I opened a bathroom door. He ran into the bathroom, and I yanked it shut and locked it. But of course, as soon as I did in the dream, I realized I was in there with him. And so I was like, oh, you know, and so once again, wake up screaming. But the last dream that I had is I was actually outside, and this was different than the dreams I'd had before. Because in this one, the mountain lion came up to me. And I recognized, I thought, okay, now I'm not even inside. There's no way for me to get away from this mountain lion. But even more than that, what I said to myself is, okay, I give up. I surrender because you are not going to stop chasing me and there is nothing that I can do about it. And so I was laying on the ground at the time, because in fact, it was kind of like I was camping, and I was laying on the ground and I just said, okay, you can have me, whatever, because you're smarter than, that's the other thing I said is, you know what? You're obviously smarter than me. And so the mountain lion then simply laid down next to me, and that was it.
Wow.
And so when you were talking about that dream and I was listening to that, I thought, wow, you know, even though I think that had to do with something else going on in my life, which I was running away from and I would not give into it, I realize how much that is the feeling of what we're talking about with lesson 131 and what we're talking about with the course is we try every single way we can think of to make the world work.
Right.
And eventually, that's it. We just say, okay, I give up. I mean, or at least it can feel that way. I give up. I must not have the answers. I must not know. And the truth is, you're smarter than me. And so I'm just going to lay down and I'm going to surrender and I'm going to listen to what you have to say because my way has not worked.
Right. Well, and that's a great analogy too of, you know, how we think that Jesus as a stand-in for God, Jesus Holy Spirit as a, you know, stand-in for God is in pursuit of us, you know, is after us to punish us, right?
Yeah.
So it is a very fearful image to us, you know, to turn to exactly the thing that we think we need to run away from. And, you know, so, But you know, so we try and try to get away from it by making everything in the dream real, by defending our, you know, by projecting it all outside ourselves and turning our backs on heaven. And yet, you know, it seems to be constantly something that we have to defend against by making everybody else around us guilty. And yet, you know, when you finally reach the point that there must be, that it's not working, that there must be a better way, you know, that maybe there's this other teacher in my mind that is smarter than me. Yeah. Maybe I don't. I mean, really, this course, becoming a pupil of Jesus, is entertaining the possibility that maybe he's right and we're wrong about everything. And he says that, you know, who's more likely to be right? I mean, look at what you did to yourself. Look at how you have forgotten everything that's true. And, you know, I happen to remember everything that's true. Your way is like hurting you all the time. and nothing you do ever lasts or works to make it better. And so, you know, maybe you might want to just entertain the possibility. Maybe I'm right. You know, and then when you finally say, you know, are willing to at least say there must be a better way, then, you know, then we see that Jesus is, he's not pursuing us at all. He's been there all along. He just, you know, he's our brother. He is us. I mean, that's what we're growing. We grow up into the awareness that we are that presence of love that never, you know, that doesn't see division, that never took the tiny mad idea of separation seriously from the get-go and remember to laugh at the silliness of, you know, dividing heaven and somehow, you know, making that impossible idea into a sinful idea. And so, you know, we begin to first say, well, at least now I have another teacher who really isn't pursuing me, but, you know, maybe I can begin to trust him. But it is that development of trust over time, because really we still want to run away from him.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, it reminds me of this lesson too, because we're running away from what really would make us happy. It's our imagination that it's scary or that it's death. I mean, it's the death of the ego. But yeah, we're running away from somebody, something, or pushing it away. Or once again, in the words of this lesson, we're waiting for heaven. And because we don't even really know what it is.
Right.
You know, the real nature is totally hidden to us. And it's only when we're willing to, like you say, just entertain the thought, just maybe I'm wrong. Just maybe there's something else here that I'm not seeing. Only when we're willing to surrender and entertain that idea are we ever going to see the other thing.
Right. And it's usually our, what motivates us to entertain that possibility, unfortunately, is usually, we have to recognize that it's not working. It's usually something painful in our lives, whether it's in our body, whether it's in our relationships, it's whether it's in the world, the greater world at large that we're seeing that's going on around us. It's the dawning realization that all of our efforts to fix and change and make better and improve and purify and all of it, they just ultimately, the world does fail. The world fails us constantly. The world is a failure of an idea.
Yeah, because we designed it to be.
Right. And because it doesn't, it's not true. I mean, it couldn't, our experiment in individuality was an impossible dream. So it had to fail, and everything within it, its solution to what we think we did also must fail, because, it can't replace heaven. It can't, the substitutes it offers do nothing to fill that lack within,
Right. Well, and in the very first paragraph of this lesson, it says you look for permanence in the impermanent, for love where there is none, for safety in the midst of danger, immortality within the darkness of the dream of death. And see, I think we don't get that. And yet, when I read those words, I'm like, oh, yes. I mean, I just know in my heart they're true.
Right. And we all know in our heart that they're true. I mean, we deny it like crazy. Constantly, and yet, even though we know it's true, we still forge on trying to make it. It's like trying to stop a train.
Yeah,
it's like even once we realize that there's something in front of us and we put the brakes on, it still seems to have this momentum of its own, The whole direction of the course, the whole curriculum of Jesus's curriculum is to get us to look at how it's not working.
Mm-hmm.
That is his, he can't teach us if we insist constantly that it's working.
Right.
If we keep denying that it's not working. So we have to, we come to the course. What brings us to the course usually is at least, the possibility that maybe there's a better way, that there must be something else, than this. There
Yes.
has to be something else than this. But even so, it's we're running away. And so, and I love that this lesson, no one can fail who seeks to reach the truth. And so much of the time in the workbook, there's these wonderful titles to lessons. Like the first paragraph, the first line is, failure is all about you while you seek for goals that cannot be achieved.
Right. I mean, in some ways, the course is, these are the kinds of things. I told Bruce once that I think we need to put together a kind of best of the course in terms of what's funny. Because that these kind of lines, they are funny, because to me, it's sort of like, it's intuitively obvious, guys. Failure is all about you when you seek goals that cannot be achieved. Duh.
Well, the second paragraph begins, goals that are meaningless are not attained. There is no way to reach them.
Yeah.
Pursuit, I'll read further in paragraph two, pursuit of the imagined leads to death because it is the search for nothingness. And while you seek for life, you ask for death,
mm-hmm.
because our replacement for the everything of heaven was a nothingness in truth. But was to believe that the idea of duality, well, built into that was the idea of mortality. That someone must lose for me to gain, and the ultimate loss is our own death.
Right.
We're willing to sacrifice that to go on with to forge ahead with our wild imaginings, of what would this experiment in individuality. But how's it working out for us? I mean, that's really the question Jesus is asking all the time.
Not well.
Not well. We have to, if we think it's working out for us, go live a little longer, and then come back. because you have to begin to at least recognize that that it's a setup, you know, and that there has to be an answer beyond this.
Right.
And that I want to find it, you know. And this lesson is all about, is a very beautiful lesson as it goes on, about, you know, there is a place in our mind where we can find it. And, you know, there is this, we can step back and, you know, ask to look at this with a new inner teacher from his perception, in which everything is okay, you know, and everyone is still loved and loving. And we're safe. We're eternally safe. You know, nothing has happened to change our reality. And we can begin to experience glimpses of that by through our willingness to say, I'm wrong. You know, I'm wrong about this. But we have to kind of come to that. You know, I was saying earlier, maybe in our last recording, that you know, we have to. It often is a process of us really coming to say, you know, this is just too painful. I can't, you know, that's what leads us back to asking, even when we are not ready to accept the answer, to sort of invoke Jesus's presence to say, you know, please help me to see this differently.
Right.
It's hurting. It's really hurting me right now. I feel like a failure, and I feel like I can't find you. And, you know, of course that's our own resistance, but you know, at least choosing to remind ourselves that I'm pushing him away. He's not pushing me away. He's still there, you know, or whatever symbol we want to use of that.
Right.
Of healed mind. Yeah.
Right. Well, and I think is it the third paragraph that says, yet searching is inevitable here. For
right.
This you came, and you will surely do the thing you came for. But the world cannot dictate the goal for which you search unless you give it power to do so. Otherwise, you still are free to choose a goal that lies beyond the world and every worldly thought, and one that comes to you from an idea relinquished yet remembered, old yet new, an echo of a heritage forgot, yet holding everything you really want.
Right.
And I love that, because that's the other thing that, you know, that this lesson is just really reinforcing, is seek and do not find. That is the dictum of the ego. Seek and do not find, unless you finally are recognizing that you need a goal. You want a goal that is beyond the world, beyond the illusion.
Right. That will not change, that we can always count on, you know, that, and it's hinting at that, you know, that idea and that section in the course of, the forgotten song, you know, that within, and, you know, it's this echo of a heritage forgot, yet holding everything you really want. And everyone, you know, although we're constantly hearing the raucous shrieks of the ego, that this is real, we have to attend it, we have to take care of it, we have to fix it, we have to react to it. You know, we also have that memory in our mind. I mean, the forgotten song, that echo of sanity and complete inclusiveness and complete safety and you know, eternally loving and loved self that we really are, and that everyone really is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we could not shatter.
Right. And, you know, I was thinking earlier this week, and I hope I can articulate this, because it's one of those things that it's kind of a feeling and I'm not sure I can say it quite right. But I was feeling, I guess I would say, depressed, and depressed about things that I was hearing on TV, especially, you know, with the upcoming election, that, you know, I'm just drawn to the chatter, you know, and yet I've started just turning it off because I can't keep my peace of mind. But I think what depresses me is I want representations in the world. I want to hear people who are inspiring and people who are saying things, not that the world is a great place, but that they're making you feel like there's hope. I'm so, you know, just depressed, or like I said, I'm not even sure that's a word, but I'm just so over hearing people criticizing everything and everyone. And so I decided, you know, I've been turning that off more and more, but I also decided I have several books that are speeches by famous people who they're considered, you know, really good speeches. And so I pulled one off the shelf of Abraham Lincoln, and I thought, you know what, I just have to counter all of this ratty, low-life kind of chatter with something that I think is going to be inspirational. And even though, I mean, I'm not making Lincoln out to be, you know, the be-all, end-all, I just think there are people in history that we can look to who had a lot of wisdom. And I thought, I'm going to just counter what I'm hearing. But, you know, I'm going to remember that it is possible for people to act a different way. But as I was reading them, I was also saying to myself, but CA, don't get confused and think that this isn't part of the illusion too. You know, what you really are seeking for is truth. What you're really seeking for is to, in a sense, see all of this a different way. And so within the illusion, you can maybe still see a reflection that seems closer to love or closer to oneness, but you're still looking to another person in the illusion to tell you that.
Right.
And so does that make sense that it's like, it did make me feel better, right, but it was important for me to just say, but this is part of the illusion too. Don't get confused.
Well, and what's part of the illusion is, you know, needing the need we have to solve the problem of those, you know, those evil ones talking.
Yes.
Talking the ego smack that, you know, distance ourselves from it. So we've always pointed a finger first at them. And then we say, but my side that believes like me, well, you know, so that is part of the ego thought system, right?
Yes, it is.
And so it doesn't, you know, that I just wanted to, when you were talking about depression, there was a line that I read from chapter 8 that I'm teaching in my class next week, because I was just reading it over to review. We're going through the text in a linear fashion, and we're in chapter 8, and this is in chapter section 7. And it says in the first paragraph, and it says, when you equate yourself with a body, you will always experience depression.
Yeah.
And I mean, the truth is, if we think that there are bodies that are right or wrong, and we're identifying with one side or another, that's a depressing, it's depressing.
And that is exactly what I was doing. I was identifying some people are right and other people are wrong, and I'm going to read the right ones.
Exactly. And that's going to make me feel better. So again, we're reaching back into the dream to try to make us feel better. And it doesn't, because we're still pointing a finger at someone else, you know?
Yes.
And as long as we're doing that, that means that we've accused ourselves of this first, you know, so the guilt never goes away.
Right.
It might be a temporary relief, but it's an ego relief, because it's like, oh, I'm, you know, yeah, that's what I needed to hear, my side.
Right. Well, and that is what I realized. Like I said, it did make me feel better. And it kind of goes back to, as long as we're in the dream, there's no reason to not make ourselves feel better. But even as I was doing it, I just said, but don't, you know, that's it. I said, don't get confused. This is all still part of the illusion. I didn't go as far, though, and I'm glad you pointed that out. I wasn't going as far as saying, see, because CA, what you're doing is you're judging here. You're judging this is good and this is bad.
Right.
And quit making the judgment. You know, can you step back from the judgment? And obviously, in that moment, I could not.
Right. And that's so. And we shouldn't feel guilty about that, because that paragraph you just read, it says, yet searching is inevitable here, for this you came. You know, the decision-making mind followed the ego into the dream and you know, at that point forgot it had a right mind, you know, became the ego. So we came here to prove that this is all real and that there are answers here, you know? And so the whole point of the course is to change the purpose of why we came to awakening, to healing the mind, you know? I mean, that's the beauty of the course, is to say, let's use the very things, the very blocks to awareness that you put there, by changing the direction that we're looking at them, you know, going back to the mind and looking at them from there, is going to lead us back to see, to retrace our steps back up the ladder that separation seemed to lead us down, and really look at the source and the real cause of this, so that we can see that there really is no cause.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, we're in school. So of course I think we become upset with ourselves and impatient with ourselves and judgmental of ourselves when we catch ourselves doing those very normal things that we all do. And, you know, politics is, boy, we're in for another good year, right?
Oh my gosh, yes.
So, and it's quite the, you know, ego fest we have going out there. So, but, you know, that's another classroom for us to where we can change the purpose. And this whole paragraph really struck me when I was reading it too, when he's saying, you came for this, you. It's he's speaking to us. We forget that he's speaking to us as the decision-making mind.
Right.
The chooser here, not as these individuals that seem caught up in the dream. And that's what, you know, to just remind ourselves even of that helps us take another step back to the mind to just say, wait a minute, you know, why am I doing that? What's my real purpose here? You know, I've made my purpose making the dream real again, but I have a choice. I have another way I can go here. And, you know, and again, that's where I want to end up. And as this lesson says, we're so heavily enforced in this because the end of this is sure, you know, nothing really did happen to change God's love for us or to in any way divide the oneness joined as one or our true nature. You know, we're just making this all up and we will, the course will lift the veil on that. If we, it's not going to do it without our permission. It's if we decide we've had enough, then we can be in school.
Right.
We can change the purpose.
Right. If we're willing to, what is it, the blue pill or the red pill from the Matrix?
Right.
If we're really willing to swallow the pill.
Right. And, you know, our willingness wavers because we have a split mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why, you know, we do this flip-flopping. But that's okay because none of that affects the efficacy, as the workbook says, of these lessons, you know. So everything in our life can now serve a different purpose, is now our curriculum to learn a different thought system, which is really not a thought system at all. It's just that, you know, it's just that this is not happening. You know, this will not make me happy. And there is a part of my mind that is unwaveringly happy and includes and kind to everyone and includes everyone and never wants to exclude and never feels that need to do so because it doesn't feel unloving within. You know, it never
right.
guilty to begin with. So, you know, that's why this is always about us. It's always this path in seeing our brothers first sinless so that we may then experience ourselves that way. And that's not something we could force and do by ourselves. It's something that we need a teacher for because it's completely contrary to, you know, to the ego that we think we are now.
Right. Well, and, you know, I love that paragraph and I'm going to read it. It says, no one remains in hell. For no one can abandon his creator, nor affect his perfect, timeless, and unchanging love. You will find heaven. Everything you seek but this will fall away. Yet not because it has been taken from you. It will go because you do not want it.
Right.
And to me, that those are priceless words too, because it speaks right back to that idea that, you know, you were talking about last week, when I'm perfect, then I'll be ready to do this course. Or when such and such happens, then I'll be ready to really look at this a different way. And we're so afraid that things are going to be taken away from us.
Right.
If we make that kind of a choice, but eventually we're going to let those things go because they're just not important to us anymore.
Right.
We just don't even want them. That kind of thought system, those kinds of feelings, we're just sick and tired of it.
And we are. I mean, there's a real, you know, I mean, I think that if we're honest with ourselves, there's a real exhaustion to trying to make what is a lie work, you know?
Yes. Yes.
And so there is a real relief. At least, you know, although this is very frightening to us, it's also, there's part of us that does know this is the answer and feels very relieved that at least now I'm going in the right direction, you know, and at least now I'm in touch with a memory and a really practical, you know, practice that I can use in my daily life at any given moment. That's going to help me feel better and help me feel more and more peaceful over time and help me to feel more loving toward others, which means I'll be able to experience more love myself, you know, for
mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, the very next paragraph is that why wait for heaven? You know, why wait for heaven? He said, it is here today. Time is the great illusion. It is past or in the future. Yet this cannot be if it is where God wills his son to be. And, you know, when we say, why are we waiting for heaven? That's something that we should ask ourselves. Why do I keep putting this in the future? You know, why do I think that I have to, that's what I was talking about, I guess, the last time we talked was the, you know, why do I think that I constantly have to solve things for myself and purify myself before I bring that stuff to Jesus, you know? I mean, I think that's a really big trap that I fall into all the time, where it's like, I have to make this better in my life and be better at these things, or there's things about me that are just too imperfect or too shameful to bring to Jesus, where he's saying, you know, bring everything to this practice. Let's
Right.
look at everything with me. Don't keep any secrets from me. There's nothing, you know, he's heard it all.
Yeah. That's true. He's like a great therapist. He goes, I've heard it all, everybody.
I've heard it all, honey, you know? And you know, there's a reverse specialness in thinking that you're the most unworthy person on the planet. Right.
Right.
Yeah, I'll get into that. You know, that's, I don't know. But the next paragraph, he says, heaven remains your one alternative to this strange world you made and all its ways, its shifting patterns and uncertain goals, its painful pleasures and its tragic joys. That's duality. That's that everything, even the good things, have this dark underbelly.
Uh-huh.
Something happens in your life and you've been waiting for it. You've been wanting it for, you know, forever. And, you know, you're elated for, you know, how long? Maybe 24 hours?
Yeah.
You know? And then it comes with a whole new set of problems, you see. So you know, there's nothing, it's our tragic joys, you know. You know, babies are born, but people we love die. This is a place that is not a kind place, you know, because it's built on an unkind thought. But it was a thought that didn't really have any effect. You know, it was a passing whim. It was silly. But we take it so seriously.
Right. Absolutely. And looking ahead in some of the things that he's saying, notice that beginning of one paragraph, leave foolish thoughts like these behind today and turn your mind to true ideas instead. I think that's what I was referring to by saying, okay, I'm going to turn off these talking heads and I'm going to reach for this book on my shelf and I'm going to go for true ideas.
Right.
And but all of a sudden I went, but these are not the true ideas.
Well,
these are not the true ideas.
See, and that's all that is being a good course student, CA, you know. No, really, I mean, catching yourself saying, wait a minute, CA, you're wrong about this, you know. I mean, that's really what we're doing constantly is, wait a minute, what am I doing here again?
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm always trying to make it real. There was a wonderful CD set, well, I mean, workshop that Ken did. It's not a CD set. I don't think it was ever published, but there was a follow-up workshop that Rosemarie and Jeff did at the foundation in Temecula Foundation for A Course in Miracles fairly recently on the grab bag of guilt. And Ken had done an original workshop on that, you know, I don't know how many years ago, but fairly not that long ago. And the, you know, that's in our grab bag. I mean, like you, politics is very much in my grab bag. You know, I mean, I came home the other night and just, you know, my husband had something on the news about it, and it's like, I didn't even want to watch it, you know?
Yeah.
I had just come from teaching a class, and it was like, no, I don't think I want to go there, you know? And, but that's because I knew it would upset me, you know? And it's not about, you know, we're not asked not to get upset about what we see going on or believe or don't believe, but, you know, we are asked to look at the cause of it and to raise it to doubt, you know? And to think that we'll feel better if we switch the channel and hear our side of things, you know?
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so it's really being a good course student, Ken always used to say, is not doing the course perfectly. It's catching how imperfect we are, you know? It's catching how much we don't want the course's answer. And seeing, wait a minute, there, you know, to seeing how much we really try to solve everything through form. And that it doesn't work, you know. That's what I mean. It's the experiencing again and again that it doesn't work that finally makes us say, okay, you know, we get tired of it. Eventually, we're going to say, you know, this doesn't work in any circumstance, and you know, we're increasing the muscle of the right mind, and we're disabling the our knee-jerk muscle of the ego.
Right. Well, and what I love about this lesson too, that is such, because I love the pictures, you know, I love the visuals, the analogies. And towards the end of this lesson, it says, this is what you should be saying to yourself. Practice this. I ask to see a different world and think a different kind of thought from those I made. The world I seek, I did not make alone. The thoughts I want to think are not my own. But then in the next paragraphs, he talks about there's a trap door. And I don't know if he calls it a trap door, but he says there's a door beneath your mind in which you cannot completely lock that away. So look for that door, look for that handle and see what's there. And so I would really encourage people, if you've not done this lesson, and I hope you're doing the lessons anyway, but, you know, really follow through with what this particular lesson is telling you or asking us to do. Because just that idea that there is a trap door, you know, that, you know, we really can find that truth. We can find heaven if we're just willing to look, you know, if we're willing to accept that maybe there is something there that we didn't know was there.
Right, right. Yes, I mean, it's a beautiful image and sort of a meditation that he's giving us at the end of this lesson. And he says, and he says, first, review the thoughts as well, which are compatible with such a world in which you think are true. Then let them go and sink below them to the holy place where they can enter not.
Right.
There is a door beneath them in your mind, which you could not completely lock to hide what lies beyond. But it is that idea of review. First, we have to review the thoughts as well, which are compatible with such a world.
Right.
But we have to look at what we're doing, what we're believing, and is that really where I want to put my faith, you know? I mean, it's not working and it's not pretty and it's not serving me, you know, it's not making me happy and it's not making anybody happy, really. I mean, however people are spinning it, it's not, you know? And so we have the power to seek for that door, the next paragraph says, and find it. But before you try to open it, remind yourself that no one can fail who seeks to reach the truth. And I think, you know, again, he's really trying to support us here, and because he knows how afraid we are, you know, and that we do think we can fail, you know, because we've put all our faith in a world that isn't working for us. And that's an excruciating belief that nothing here, you know, nothing here works and there's nothing else.
Right, right, exactly. So and that's why that idea, there's a door. There really is a door. There's a way.
There's a boogeyman behind the door. You know, we think that opening that door is going to be annihilation.
Right.
And he's trying to get us to see, no, that's where truth lies. That's where peace lies. That's where everything you've ever wanted and have shut away, locked up away from yourself lies, you know. So I'm with you. Don't be afraid. We can open this together. You know, that's why it's all about the next paragraph. He says, put out your hand and see how easily the door swings open with your one intent to go beyond it. You know, angels light the way so that all darkness vanishes and you are standing in a light so bright and clear that you can understand all things you see, because we understand nothing here.
Right. Well, and you know, that last line is one that always, I love it, but it's the one that can really send me on a detour, because angels light the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, oh, angels are lighting the way. And see, that takes me in a sense right back into the illusion. And in fact, it's kind of interesting because years ago, Mark Husson on his radio show had the opportunity to have Ken as a guest.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things they did is answered a few questions. And so I submitted the question, what about that line in lesson 131 that says angels light the way? And Ken, you know, just kind of laughed and made the comment something. Well, you realize this is just like an analogy. This is just kind of,
Right.
It's just like, you know, giving you a picture. There's no angels up there lighting the way. But I thought, but I just love it still.
But it's a reassuring fairy tale again. I mean,
yes,
talking to us as little children, you know, and angels for most of us are a comforting image.
Right.
And so, angels are just reflections of the light. It's just the thought of God.
And I think that's almost exactly what Ken said. They're just a reflection of the light. They're just a reflection of what is there.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just another one of those symbols, you know, Cameron's always saying, don't confuse symbol with source. And it's really the source that we crave, that we long for, that we
Right.
for. And but angels, but we don't know anything about the source. So angels are a helpful symbol to us in the condition we think we're in. And that's why Jesus uses that kind of language, because he, you know, we wouldn't know what the heck he was talking about otherwise.
Right.
Light doesn't mean anything to us really in and of itself, you know. Certainly it's very limited, our idea of that. So, and then, you know, in the next paragraph, he really talks about it's a nice segue into really when we put out our hand for this, you know, this analogy of a door that we're opening, what we're really doing is putting out our hand to our teacher, you know, and you cannot fail today. There walks with you the spirit having sent you that you might approach this door someday and through his aid slip effortlessly past it in the light. And so, you know, Jesus, Holy Spirit, again, that willingness, however little it seems at times, to at least say, you know, I want the peace of God. You know, help me to see, as I think I was saying in the last time we talked, help me to see myself as you see me, you know, to begin to open to your faith in me, because my faith is weak. You know, my faith is almost non-existent at times because I keep confusing it with my faith in the world, and the world is a faithless place, you know?
Well, and that kind of speaks to the very last lines of this lesson. Today I seek and find all that I want. My single purpose offers it to me. And I like that too, because that's one thing I always notice that when Ken's talking about it or when you see it in the course, it's about single purpose, single mindedness, and the fact that the ego has a single minded purpose to basically keep us in the dark that we're decision makers. But we can have a single purpose. You know, it's like it doesn't have to be so complex. It doesn't have to be this labyrinth. There can be a single purpose. And when we're willing to go with a single purpose, it'll open up to us.
Right. And really that means the single purpose is when we're willing to join our purpose with our right minds, with Jesus'
right.
spirit. And so, you know, we unite. And what happens when we do that is we also bring everyone with us, you know, because no one is excluded from that purpose. We see that that's the need of every heart, again, is to heal the terrible split in the mind over believing in the belief in the guilt over separating from Jesus. So, you know, we see that all of us have the same need to take that hand to heal their minds about what they believe they are, you know?
Right. Well, it's such good stuff, Susan.
It is a great lesson. Yeah.
It is. It is a wonderful lesson, and I'm so glad that you suggested it. It was just very timely and with some other things that I'm doing. So I just thank you so much for suggesting it and allowing us to, you know, talk about it today. And thanks for coming on 2 weeks in a row to do that. And but we do need to wrap it up for today. We have a few minutes left. So do you have any announcements that you'd like to make today?
You know, just my usual pitch for the Foundation for A Course in Miracles in Temecula, California, and the great work they're doing, the wonderful, oh my gosh, CD sets and books available on their website, as well as the live streaming classes that they're doing. The staff that is teaching there are continuing to teach the great classes, you know, based on Ken's teachings, and now they're available through online live streaming. So you can sign up on the Temecula schedule page for some of those. I've attended, you know, several of them now, and it's just fabulous to be able to watch it if you can't get out there. And, you know, really immerse yourself in this deep teaching of the course and Ken's teachings. And also, you know, with these teachers that spent decades with Ken, you know, really working on the healing of their own mind and you know, learning from him. And so, and then the other thing that there will be a wonderful new hardcover keepsake anthology of the Complete Lighthouse newsletter articles called From the Lighthouse to Look Upon Darkness Through Light Must Dispel It by Ken and Gloria. And it's a collection of all these wonderful articles that Ken wrote over many years that are just these great essays and you know, so treasures for all of us. And this will be a beautifully bound book It's also including all of the testimonials that people wrote that are so touching and beautiful to read in themselves and keep close by to go back to again and again. So this anthology will include that, as well as commentary from Ken and Gloria. And so look for an announcement on that coming in. It will be published in October sometime, and would be a great Christmas gift to yourself or to someone that you love that is really committed to this path.
Nice. Well, thank you for that. I would look forward to that. And there will be announcements then.
There'll be something coming from the foundation on it. And, once it's available, they don't have a hard date on when it's available yet, I don't think, but it's going to be sometime in October, I believe.
Yay. And you're going to be at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center on the 18th of October?
I am at the gathering at 11 o'clock. And, people are welcome to come to that. I think the same day that we have, there is also a basics class going on at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center now, run by the School for A Course in Miracles, which was formerly called the School of Reason. And I teach once a month, usually that class. It's rotating teachers. There's some wonderful teachers there. And come down if you're interested in either you're new to the course and you're interested in really learning the metaphysics, or if for long-term students who really want to ground themselves in both the metaphysics and the deep teaching of the practice of forgiveness, come on down. It's a fun class.
Yay.
15 on Sunday mornings at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center.
So 9:15 to what? How long is it?
It goes to 10:45.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. And so that's at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center in Denver, Colorado. It's kind of southeast Denver, off of Bucktel, and not too far from Colorado Boulevard. So if you're coming from Boulder or coming from, on the highway, you just exit right onto Colorado Boulevard, I believe. But in any case, you can always look it up on the internet, the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center in Denver, Colorado. So thank you, Susan, and thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you, CA. It's always fun.
Yes, it is. Okay. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that's a wrap. Thanks for making A Course in Miracles part of your day. You can find Susan on her website, which is 4A's in Forgiveness. Now, that's one word, Forays in Forgiveness. So it's www.4aysinforgiveness.com. I'd like to thank the listeners and to everybody in the chat room, and also to our producer, Scott Weaver, today. You can usually find me on Tuesdays for my show Simple Tales, where we discuss one of my favorite illusions in this dream world, astrology. But this coming Tuesday on the 6th, I'm actually going to be out of town. So I have a guest host, Alita McClellan, who's also an incredible astrologer. So I hope you will tune in to hear Alita on October 6th on Simple Tales at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 Eastern, here on 1-2 Radio. And speaking of astrology, I would remind you that coming up next week, we've got a couple of exciting things going on. Maybe not as exciting as that eclipse or those two eclipses that we had recently. But next week on the 8th, Venus is going to move into Virgo, which means that the shadow of her retrograde, which went on this summer, is finally completely over. And the next day on the 9th, Mercury stations direct, which means its retrograde is over. Now, it's not out of the shadow yet, but it is basically over. If you want to know more about what that means and to stay up with everything that's happening every single day, astrologically speaking, I hope that you're reading my article, The Week Ahead in Mark's Power Peak, available every Saturday night in your email box. For now, I hope you'll stay tuned to all the rest of the live programming that we have for you here today on Fabulous Fridays. Coming up next is Christine Dumouriez with The Through Line. Until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You've been listening to A Course in Miracles with my guest, Susan Dugan, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way we think about life and spirituality.